Welcome to The Right You, where we teach you a little Texas law and provide hints for navigating the Texas legal system in the process, all sponsored by The Right Firm. So get ready to start your legal education.
Hello, and welcome again to another edition of The Right You. My name is Patrick Wright, and in this edition, as in past, we're going to try to educate you a little bit on Texas law and help you navigate the Texas legal system. This will be episode number 2, so having survived episode number 1, we're well on our way to trying to create and provide a valuable teaching service for Texans and to give you a little bit more information on Texas law. In this edition, we're going to talk to you about the initial divorce consultation. Things that you need to know that might smooth that process out. And the first thing is this is the process after you've had a chance to call around to various lawyers. Most of the individuals who come into our office are referral-based. Past clients have sent them to us, or a professional has sent them to our office. And one of the things that you need to know and need to ask up front is whether there's going to be a charge for the initial conference. And there are some lawyers who do charge for the initial visit. There are other lawyers who provide a free consultation. And that's an important question, because I've had some people come to my office after meeting with a lawyer, and they were upset because they had met with a lawyer for 2 hours and been charged $600 for the time. And they said they didn't know that up front, and it made them very uncomfortable. And so we let everyone know up front that we do charge for a consultation. It's a flat rate. It's a flat $100, and it's discounted from our normal hourly rate. And it gives you a chance to come in and sit down and talk to a lawyer, normally for about an hour or an hour and a half. And it lets us answer your questions that you have as far as what's going on with your case and what might be involved. And one of the other things that I typically see on initial consultation is individuals or people who are trying to come to the office will bring people with them. And you need to understand that at the point in time period that you meet with that lawyer, that there's an attorney-client privilege that is created. And that attorney-client privilege, much as if you were talking to a priest or your minister, that is confidential. And it cannot be disclosed to anyone as far as the contents you reveal to them. But there is a concern that I have, because occasionally, it hasn't happened very often over the past 16 years, that someone will show up with their spouse to this meeting, and we do not allow that at The Right Firm. And one of the reasons why is it's a conflict of interest. A lawyer can't meet with both husband and wife, provide legal counsel to both. Definitely a conflict of interest. And so, please, if you're thinking about showing up for a meeting with either us or another lawyer, that you don't bring your spouse with you to that meeting. The other thing to realize is that you're there to seek legal guidance and information, and it's not a counseling session. So sometimes that'll make people very uncomfortable, because maybe they've worked things out beforehand and they want to, go over it with the lawyer so that everybody feels comfortable. And yet you need to understand that if you were to show up in our office with your spouse, we would politely come out and advise you that we are not allowed to meet with both people, and then let y'all talk about it to see if maybe there would be a better time for us to meet with you, or just let your spouse know that this is not meant to be cruel, or we're not trying to get in the way of y'all coming to an agreement or resolving things. It was just we can't do that. And what happens a lot of times is that someone will come into our office and they will they'll meet with us, and then they'll go back and they'll talk to their spouse about what was going on or what the process is. And of course, we don't advise you to tell your spouse about what our legal advice is, because then you'd be waiving the attorney-client privilege or the information that you gave us or that we provided to you. But you know, sometimes if you get the information, then it'll put you in a better position to be able to understand the process and explain things. But we just can't meet with both people at the same time. Now, the other thing I see is occasionally people will bring a family member or a friend to the initial consultation. And you need to understand that as a client and potential client, that it really is your discretion as far as that family and friend, if you'd want to have men there. And we typically will advise individuals in that consultation that if they do have that family member or the friend sit in, that they're waiving attorney-client privilege, and you need to understand that all the information that you disclose to us is subject to disclosure and subject to the light of day that would not otherwise occur because of the attorney-client privilege. And, you know, like I said before, what that privilege means is that the discussions that you have with your lawyer are private. No one can force you to turn over that information, or that information will not be disclosed in a court of law. And so, you know, sometimes there are things that come up that maybe we would not want to be disclosed, or and it would affect the case, and it would affect the strategy, or what may or may not occur. So that's another thing that we advise individuals, that they shouldn't have a third party, a brother, sister, mom, or dad sit in the consultation. Other things that you need to be aware of before you go into that consultation is that if there is a child involved, and if there is an abuse allegation involved, then we are under the same obligation as a medical provider, or in that we would have to disclose abuse or neglect if we know that that's gone on. So, or if potentially a child might be in danger, we would have to disclose that and could have to disclose it. And so, you need to be aware that if there are allegations about abuse of an adult or a child, that they could be subject to disclosure. So you want to be careful and broach that subject with whoever your lawyer is gingerly, so that you let them know that there's a potential allegation that might be involved, especially if it involves you, or if Child Protective Services has been called or they're involved in your case. Now, knowing that, when I get into initial consultation with a client on a divorce matter, what I will traditionally do is I will want to know how long you've been married. I will want to know if there's a separation, if you're still living together. And sometimes I'll even want to know whether or not your spouse knows that you're even at the meeting. Another thing is whether there's been a case filed, where you live, how long you've lived at that address. If you have children, how old are they? Do they live with you? What are their ages? And then, you know, once we get through the preliminary information, which I really consider background, and a lot of that helps us to determine where the case should be filed, if you've been living in Texas for a long enough period to file it, which is 6 months in the state of Texas, and then a county for 90 days, that would be the county of residence. Sometimes that helps us determine where you actually live, because where we practice law, that sometimes that there are boundary lines where a case might be filed in one county or the other, depending on where the person lives, which we're trying to locate that. You know, and then we're trying to also determine, and which would really help the lawyer out, which occasionally I'll ask someone, are you just here seeking general information, or are you at the point in time period where you decided that maybe somebody has filed a case or you want to file it? And, you know, some of those things, if you're not at the stage where you want to file a divorce, but you're just seeking general information, we have a lot of people who come in what we refer to as divorce planning, and that really is determining sort of, you know, what the steps are, which is a little bit different than just a regular divorce consultation, because it may be, you know, how you should, what information, additional information you may need, how accounts might need to be set up, what you can and can't do, and it may be more of a planning function down the road for what it were to happen, and if and just let your lawyer know up front whether or not it's more of a planning meeting or whether or not that you're at that point where you know you want to file. And then occasionally we'll have people who come in. This is extremely common, that they're really not sure. It's a very difficult process to come to that decision, and I always have told people for years that no one can really tell you whether it's a right decision for you to make. That is a decision that you're going to have to make individually with some maybe some guidance from a trusted advisor, a family member, or a friend. But ultimately, you know, a lawyer should not be pushing you in a direction to file one way or the other. That's your personal decision. And then once we get that background, I also like to ask people sort of why you're here. What was a defining moment that brought you into our office? Was there, and has there been any abuse? Was it a situation where, you know, maybe you just decided and the other spouse just decided that it was time to stop things? Maybe the y'all were waiting for the kids to get out of school, high school, and go into college. Maybe they're or were some incidents that have occurred in the marriage, such as one spouse being unfaithful. Or maybe someone wasn't truthful about certain events. And these are important because even though that Texas is a no-fault state, which means that you don't really necessarily have to have a reason to get divorced in Texas, that if you... if there are some things like adultery, maybe one of the spouses was not faithful to the other, or they've been abusive, cruel toward the other, these things have ramifications for the division of assets and potentially on a child custody situation. So those are things that would need to be addressed. The other issue that you need to be focused on, obviously, and we always think it's the highest priority. If there are children involved, we always say that and believe that the kids come first. And speaking as a parent, I think it's important, and I've always said this, that if you have a case that involves kids where there is a custody case involved, I really think it's important on a personal preference to have someone who has been a parent and who understands what it's really like to raise kids on a day-to-day basis because... for me, and I do a lot of custody cases, it really, it's easier to explain and understand and sympathize with someone who has children and has raised children because you've been there, and it's just one of those life experiences. It's sort of hard to explain sometimes if someone hasn't experienced that. So, you know, and as far as kids, it's... some people say, well, you know, what do I need to know about that? And, you know, I've found over the years that just in talking to individuals and explaining to them, you know, the difference between sole custody or joint custody, as far as your rights as a parent and as far as what your duties are, and then going into the different time schedules for access that parents would have that we discuss in a full consultation. Those things are really fleshed out. It may help for child support in Texas if you know what your spouse makes and you bring in a wage statement or a payroll stub or last year's tax return. Those things might help as far as a lawyer assessing what child support should be. And if you know what someone's the health insurance coverage is and what the cost is, whether it's a family plan or the cost per child, that might help out the lawyer as well. As far as property goes, when we're sitting in that consultation, we're going to want to have at least some semblance of idea about what assets are there and what debts there. Sometimes people don't know that, and that's okay. I always tell individuals that what I'm really looking for is just a general schematic in the hour, so I can start getting ahead of the curve as far as being able to identify issues, whether the property was accumulated prior to the marriage, which or was in existence and was owned prior to the marriage, which would be separate property, or whether or not it was acquired during the marriage, which would be community property, and also any issues that are related to that. But the best thing to do is just sort of jot down on a piece of paper before you come into the office what assets do you have, cars, insurance accounts, retirement accounts, bank accounts. And you know, that one of the things is, I think people, you know, sometimes worry, you know, about providing that information because you know, it is confidential and it's private. And it's no fun when you're sitting there having to have a, you know, life examining moment when you're going through what your finances are. But it's really important that your lawyer know that those informations. And you know, when we start talking about assets, it's really not necessary for us to get down to every pot and pan. But it is important for the bigger items: cars, homes, retirement accounts. Those type of items, it's good for us to have an idea about what they are so that we can tell you how potentially a court may or may not divide those assets. You know, and the other thing is on debts, it's really important as well that you have an idea about what your debt is. I have told clients for years that it's a really good idea in a potential divorce case that you run a credit check on yourself. You run a 3-in-1 credit report from all 3 major credit reporting bureaus, because different bureaus report to different others, and get a snapshot, because there may be cards out there that you forgot. You know, occasionally we'll find someone who has a spouse who has signed another spouse up for a credit card that they had no knowledge of, and it's just important to deal with that in advance than to find out after the fact when the case is over with. So to the extent that you can get that information, that may be helpful as well. You have to understand that when you're meeting with a lawyer in that initial interview, that a lot of times people will want commitments as far as, you know, how long is this case going to take? And, you know, we can tell you there's a 60-day waiting period in Texas. You can't be divorced for 60 days. And if it gets resolved and it's amicable, then you could get divorced on the 61st day. Unless it's in a completely agreeable situation, then that's not incredibly likely to occur, but it can if everybody is agreeable. And so you would just need to know that up front, that the lawyer just can't guarantee a result. When we're dealing with courts, I always tell clients that you can control me somewhat and I can control you somewhat, but we don't have any control over the other party, little control over the other lawyer, and no control over the judge. So, you know, when you get humans involved in any equation, there is room for all sorts of errors and different time frames to get the cases done. And typically, most sort of settlement negotiations will proceed at the pace of the slowest decision maker. So lawyers can give you ranges, but we can't give you guarantees. The other thing that most people want to know is, or you should ask your lawyers, is how are fees charged? And we charge by the hour for our services, for the most part. We do offer a flat fee service for uncontested divorces, which if you haven't seen it or don't know about it, check out nofrillstexasdivorce.com. You can see it off our website at therightlawyers.com. And you know, that's a site where the fees are somewhat fixed. But for the most part, the lawyers will charge by the hour for their time, and you know, those fees can run anywhere from $150 up to $375 an hour on a range of scale. And so most lawyers will require that if you decide to retain them, that you sign a fee agreement, which is a written engagement, and they'll require that you put a retainer up front. There's really no standard retainer. People will call us and they'll say, you know, I want to hire you. Just how much is it? And we always say, well, we'd rather come in and have you come in and sit down and talk to us, because we're trying to figure out what type of work we're going to have to do. And, you know, if we just set some standard amount to charge you, then that amount in some cases may not be the right amount. Some cases it may be the right amount. In other cases it may be a lot. So it just sort of depends on what the case is, and the lawyer would have to make that determination when we meet with you. At the point in time that get to that point, we sort of go through what's involved in the process as far as the contract. We'd explain that to you. We'd require payment up front prior to commencing any work. And you need to understand, too, occasionally this happens, that just because you meet with a lawyer does not mean that that person is your lawyer. Occasionally we have, people who meet with us, and then we hear from, somebody else, oh, this person told me that you're representing them. And until we have a written fee agreement signed, and until the initial fee has been paid as far as a retainer, then the attorney relationship has not technically been created as far as that lawyer is going to be retained to work for you. And so you would just need to know that up front. Another thing that sometimes people talk about, and they need to understand these meetings, is someone would want their maiden name changed, a man does not have a right to say, I don't want her to have my last name anymore. And then I've had some people ask me that. And the other thing is that you need to know that if you'd want to have your name changed to go back to your maiden name, that it's much better to do it during the divorce process. You'll save yourself a lot of money if you do it during the process. But occasionally I'll see lawyers who forget to ask their clients about that. Then the other thing is, occasionally I have people ask me about whether or not a court can force them to go to counseling and to repair their marriage. And I always tell clients, most of the judges I know will not force you to go to counseling, and they will not hold up the divorce case to allow people to go to counseling unless both people agree to it. So it's just normally not an options there. I always tell everybody, if you're thinking about going to counseling, I'd focus on the counseling rather than filing a divorce case as far as getting that done. But as far as bringing forms in, if you have documents that you want a lawyer to look at, go ahead and bring them in. Just understand in an hour, it's sort of difficult to look at an entire settlement proposal. Occasionally we have people that will try to draft it up on themselves and want to come in, in a short time and ask them whether or not this is a good deal or not. And, sometimes that's just impossible to do in a short amount of time. And, if that's the case, just let them know up front that you think you might have something worked out. And then it's merely more of a document review where lawyers will charge by the hour. And that time could take, anywhere from an hour and a half to 2 hours to go through the document with you in detail to make sure it matches up with what Texas law is. And so that's really some just general information on, meeting with a lawyer for the initial divorce consultation. And I hope that you found that information helpful. And we hope that you'll look forward to listening to other editions of The Right You, to help you navigate the Texas legal system.
Thanks for listening to us on The Right You. If you'd like to reach us, you may call us at 972-353-4600 or check us out on the web, therightlawyers.com.